whenever you are ready, do you care to wish? Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I do, Your Honor. I would respectfully ask the court to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, sir. It will be done. Thank you. Ready?
May it please the court. And may it please the court. We're here on Charles Homestead versus Commonwealth with regard to an issue of disproportionality with regard to his sentence. As our argument, we are arguing that we've argued on brief that the sentence in this case is disproportionate as applied and violates the Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment. The defendant charged under 18.2374.3c certainly, we understand, carries their mandatory minimums with regard to that statute. In fact, the defendant, first offense is 5 years, and second offense is 10 years mandatory minimum. And we understand the argument made at trial was that the court could run those sentences concurrent because the statute did not prohibit the court from running them concurrently. The sentencing guidelines in the case there were two different sets of sentencing guidelines, one of which said that it was, I believe, a 10-year to 13-year with a midpoint of around 12. The probation officer then amended the sentencing guidelines and put a 50 years at the low end of the guidelines, 50 years at the high end of the guidelines, with a midpoint of 50 years. We're arguing that the sentence is that there's an inference of gross disproportionality just because of the maximum of the of the amount of years given to the defendant based on the charge that he was charged with, along with sentences given in this case as a result or with regard to other cases, very similar situated cases. This was the largest or the most years given in this particular jurisdiction, 50 years given to a defendant charged with these particular crimes. With regard to the case law that the defendant was relying upon, we made an argument that this case is similar to the Solemn case, which is a United Supreme Court case, United States Supreme Court case 463 U.S. 277, in which the defendant there was given a life sentence for a conviction of uttering a check of $100 on an insufficient fund. The Supreme Court in Solemn found that this life imprisonment case for such an offense was barbaric, and that it was that the sentence in that case was disproportionate when compared with the crime that was committed. Certainly,
back. This is Judge Russell.
Judge Russell.
I take it you would agree that if we were here on only one count, the mandatory minimum would not be excessive.
Certainly, we would agree with that, and we would also argue, Your Honor, that these circumstances involve two different victims, but certainly two series of events. We certainly understand that if it were just one count, it would be a much different case to argue.
Well, but if that is in fact the case, and there are multiple convictions, how can it be excessive to simply add reasonable sentences together for each time there is a conviction?
Well, we would argue that because the amount of sentences, not usually in this jurisdiction, the sentences are ran concurrent when it's those mandatory minimums and not ran consecutively. Certainly, it is within the purview of the legislature to set such. We didn't appeal this on the grounds that the statute was unconstitutional. That's already been challenged. We challenged it on a disproportionate application of the statute, and certainly it's within the trial court's discretion. We would understand that, but we just believe that as applied in this case, that certainly that the punishment was disproportionate.
Counsel, this is Judge Chapin. In reference to Sims, did the judge comment or take into account, refresh my memory on that, in reference to, weren't there 25 or 30 additional phone calls while he was waiting trial in reference to this?
Yes, Your Honor. And with regards to that, that was part of our argument, which this honorable court did not take up. That there was a hearsay objection that counsel made at the sentencing, and that the trial court, in rendering its decision, stated that that there would not, this is not a situation where, when reviewing the pre-sentence report, that the court was not inclined to enter such a punishment as 50 years. Once the court heard the testimony of the telephone calls, that weighed in the court's mind, and that's the reason why the court entered the punishment or the sentence of 50 years. And we believe that that certainly was inappropriate and led to some of the reasoning why the court would, and again, disproportionate as applied. With regard to cases very similarly situated, certainly the Supreme Court has said that anything short of life imprisonment is not disproportionate as applied. We have argued in this case that because Mr. Olmstead is 40 years old at the time, thereabouts at the time of sentencing, a 50-year life sentence or a 50-year sentence would equate to a life sentence in this case.
Judge Chapin again, wouldn't he be subject to geriatric parole, perhaps?
Yes, Your Honor. He would be, and I know that that is something that I anticipate that the Commonwealth is going to argue. Certainly understand that argument. However, it's not counsel's understanding of geriatric parole is not that it's certainly automatic. He would be eligible for such geriatric parole, but certainly not automatic. And certainly he would face a parole board that would understand that the charges that he, or the convictions that he is in prison for. And so our argument would be that even the geriatric parole is not a sufficient safeguard against the life imprisonment term, which this basically amounts to. With regard to the case law in this case, in the Fourth Circuit, there's also a case, Graham v. Florida, which we've cited, where there's a probation violation that where the probationer was sentenced to life in prison. And that case is 560 U.S. 48. Very similar to this case, this set of circumstances with regard to a certain sentence at 50 years for these particular solicitation trials. And with that, that is my argument at this point. I will just respond to counsel at the end of their closing. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Pack, thank you. You have 7 minutes remaining. Mr. Murphy?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Gene Murphy for the Commonwealth. The first thing that hasn't been discussed yet is the waiver. If you look in the record, you see no reference whatsoever in the trial court to the Constitution, or to, and more specifically, to the Eighth Amendment. The only
Mr.
thing...
Murphy,
yes.
Mr. excuse me, this is Judge Huff. There was reference to excessiveness of the sentence, though, during argument, and isn't that...
That's correct, Your Honor.
To satisfy 801.384?
Oh, no, Your Honor, I don't think so. I think what we have there is just a statement that, you know, compared to other sentences, this is too lengthy. But it's certainly no invocation of the Eighth Amendment, and no, the judge certainly had no idea that this was a constitutional issue. He's, it seems to me that the most appropriate way for him to review this argument is that the defendant is simply saying this is too much time. I shouldn't get this much. But, I mean, I think... Yes, Your Honor.
This is Judge Chafin, and along the lines of what Chief Judge Huff is talking about, if you will recall, we had a Murphy case, and of course that is pressed in my memory because the Supreme Court found on this level that they had not raised the issue of the Constitution, but the Supreme Court, and it was written by the Chief Justice at the time, and they concluded that, in fact, it did trigger it because you couldn't make the argument without it. And isn't the Murphy case very similar in reference to any type of waiver of 5A18?
Well, I don't think so, Monica, because here you could certainly, the judge could certainly view this as a mere argument that the sentence was too long for the circumstances, and would not be really a question of disproportionality under the Eighth Amendment. I mean, I think defense counsel often argues that the sentence should be shorter than that recommended by the Commonwealth's attorney, and say that this is, you know, too much time, but it certainly doesn't invoke the constitutional protections. I think the defendant recognized that in part in his brief, where he suggested that this court apply the ends of justice exception. But in any event, I mean, if you move on to the merits, the case doesn't present any problem for this court, because in Cole in 58 Virginia Rapp, this court in fact held that the Eighth Amendment protection does not apply to cases that do not involve death or life without parole. We certainly do not have that here. And, you know, the claim that somehow it is equivalent to life without parole was rejected in the Angel case in the Virginia Supreme Court. That was a juvenile case where they sought to apply the Supreme Court holding in the pre-Graham case that life without parole for juveniles was improper for unconstitutional for non-capital offenses. And the courts and Angel ruled that, well, it's not life without parole because geriatric parole is available. It doesn't have to be guaranteed in any way. As long as it is available, there's no longer life without parole. There's life without parole until Mr. Olmstead turns 60. So actually none of the cruel unusual punishment cases have any application here. But I think the court's already pointed out that the important thing here is the legislature has determined this is a very serious offense, that the second and subsequent offenses each bear a 10-year sentence. Certainly, if for these seven offenses the court could impose a sentence of 60 years, there can be no way that a sentence of 50 years is, in fact, unconstitutional. The legislature has said that each of these crimes should bear a very heavy sentence, and there's no any indication anywhere that the courts should resist the temptation to make sentences consecutive, that in fact they should make sentences concurrent. There's just no authority for that fact. So we have a situation where this man could certainly have been sentenced to 60 years without any violation of Virginia law, and I think without any claim that the legislature did not intend it. So it would be hard to imagine how you could find this a cruel and unusual punishment when it is specifically set forth by the legislature. And even if there were a question in this case, don't forget that, you know, this man was on probation for a sex offense in New York, which said that he was not to have access to a computer. Nevertheless, he committed these offenses on the computer, and even after his arrest, continued to seek have sexual conversations with teenagers, people he knew to be teenagers, while in jail. I mean, the no question that the judge was really impressed by that. The claim that it was somehow hearsay and shouldn't have been considered has already been rejected by this court. so it really doesn't warrant any consideration. The basic fact here is that this is a fully authorized sentence, fully supported by the legislature, and there's no reason to find it unconstitutional. Unless there are any questions, I'll request that the decision below be affirmed.
Right, hearing no other questions, we thank you very much, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Pack, any rebuttal?
Yes, just very briefly. With regard to the situation of waiver, Mr. Murphy cite the brief, our brief, the appellant's brief, with regard to the ends of justice exception. And if the court would note that we asserted that we raised this issue through a closing argument in the argument with regard to the impending possible, at the time, because the judge hadn't rendered the sentence, possible impending sentence would be excessive, and then as part of the record, the court will see that there was a motion filed for the court to reconsider the sentencing, which the court denied without hearing. Certainly, we believe the issue was raised for excessiveness, and even the only reason we put the ends of justice rationale in there was to further preserve the argument if this court found the argument wasn't preserved. So it's a either-or type of argument where we believe it was preserved. However, even if not, we believe that the ends of justice exception applies in this case. Much like the argument that we made before, we believe, again, that the punishment in this case, the sentence, was disproportionate and violates the Eighth Amendment just on the regards of disproportionality as applied in this case, and amounts, again, to a life sentence for Mr. Olmstead. There may be a possibility of geriatric parole, but we believe that, again, that's not something that he might qualify for, something that he probably would not qualify for. And in that case, we would believe that this is basically a life sentence and argue that, again, that the sentence is disproportionate and ask the court to remand with further instructions as far as sentencing. Thank you very much.
Very well, thank you. The case stands submitted. You'll hear from us shortly. We appreciate the argument today. The court will be adjourned, and the judges will go into conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors.